Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 138.
This week on the podcast, the State of the Union is Tuesday, and you should watch just to see two things: the clapping theatrics and Biden's facial expressions as he descends into boredom.
And upon hearing that income inequality is a thing, car elevator owner Mitt Romney tries caring a little, but fails to convince even his own party of his change of heart.
California Democrats conjure more credible contenders for their 2016 Senate race in 2 days than either political party has managed to scrounge up for the presidential race in 2 years.
And much of the country and world fails to recognize the irony of tweeting anti-Muslim and other racist things on MLK Day.
Surprising news! A Hollywood cabal populated by ancient rich white men has no respect for civil rights stories or the historically downtrodden Lego people.
And GOP congressmen and senators take a group trip to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and enjoy chocolate syrup salad dressing and chocolate soap with the rest of the children.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
So do that.
Yes.
And then find us on Facebook. We've been posting better articles on Facebook
yeah,
than
right?
usual. We have a lot of gossipy great stuff. We're going to also talk about the things we've been posting on the podcast.
Yeah.
But we're not afraid to talk about things twice.
Certainly not.
Not
when they're as good as
as
what
the things
they are.
We're telling you about.
Exactly.
But we begin this week, because it is State of the Union week.
Yes.
With some talk about Obama's new tax plan.
Yes.
Which he is going to talk about in the State of the Union.
Right.
That is tomorrow / the day that you will be listening to this podcast.
Correct.
So
Tuesday.
Today.
Yes. That's right. They released some details about his tax plan on Saturday, and it's pretty great. It's probably going nowhere in Congress fast, but I mean,
well,
you know,
is.
Whatever.
So,
nothing
like, what
is.
Does he care?
That's
he
the
might
thing,
as well
right?
propose that we stop the bottom 90% from having to pay taxes and tax only the top 10%.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone would be like, all right, well, it's
well,
about as credible as anything
and
else.
And that's sort of what all the, you know, everybody seems to think his plan is anyway, is to just sort of, you know, announce these ideas and then force the Republicans to not vote on them or to say no to them,
exactly.
basically, because they all sound fairly reasonable. So, basically, the tax package includes sort of three main things. It's a new tax break for two-earner families, and a tripling of the child tax credit, and they're going to pay for it all through a big increase in capital gains taxes and a hefty fee to discourage risky borrowing by the big banks.
Yeah.
So really getting in all the things there.
All the things that people want.
Yeah.
These are the things that people want. Not,
right.
not the things that corporations want.
Right.
And
or
corporations are people, I guess, according
well,
to
true.
Our friend Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney
but
yeah.
But this is these are the things that voters want.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's basically betting that it's going to be super awkward when Republicans have to explain why they don't want to triple the child tax credit
right.
to their voters who all have 500 children and are living in abject poverty.
Right. Well, and he picked, you know, he's always clever when he does this, and it doesn't necessarily always matter when
right.
he's trying to get bills passed, but he's, you know, cleverly picked things that the Republicans have supported in one way or another. They haven't supported necessarily paying for it through higher tax,
right.
you know, higher taxes
for the wealthy.
But they
also haven't supported math in a lot of situations,
no, exactly.
which involve, like, they haven't supported paying for tax cuts ever.
Right, exactly.
So they don't
because,
understand these.
You know, because, for instance, you know, this $3,000 per child tax credit, which is actually three times what it is right now, Marco Rubio, who's potentially running for president, he has supported this. Well, he supported, like, a $2,500, I think. So
right.
it sort of is in the range of things. He sort of took a lot of ideas like that people have supported and then sort of, like, are
well,
putting them
this
into this tax
sort
bill.
Of the genius of Obamacare is he basically pitched their own health care plan back
right.
to them and was like, what now?
yeah, exactly.
And then now they've spent four yeah. years trying to pretend like they didn't have anything to do with it, and they
yeah,
thought of it.
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of these things are things that they talk about as little, like, band-aids because they want to give tax cuts to corporations,
right.
and they need a bill to hide that tax cut in. So the
yeah.
bill that they hide the tax cut in is a bill where they increase, you know, a refund for people with kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, so he's basically taking the little things that they've used to distract us,
yes.
the sort of smoke and mirrors elements of the
right.
bill, and is just proposing those.
Right, exactly. The other genius thing that he did is that he's proposing this tax increase on capital gains taxes, which is where they're going to pay for most of this, and he's proposing increasing it from 20% to 28%, and 28% is the rate that everyone paid on their capital gains under Reagan.
Yeah.
Which
and
is
if
just
it
sort
was
of like,
good enough for Reagan,
right, that's like the
hero
perfect, yeah.
to the Republican Party.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, that's another genius sort of like, I mean, he's really... He's trying to
out-genius them.
Yeah, he is.
He's
not always
I mean,
hard. But.
He's out-geniusing them. He might not be out-maneuvering them because they're
right.
crazy.
Yeah.
But he is certainly out-geniusing them in this moment.
yeah. But it really does sort of like point to, you know, the growing increase in, you know, income inequality and everyone trying to fix that. Even Republicans are acknowledging that that's a problem. Well, we're going to get to that in a little bit.
A big stat that came out this week that was just like the most horrifying thing in the whole world. And already, obviously, this has been a major issue for years because that's what Occupy was about. I mean, that's what we've all been talking about for years. But it's this stat that came out was so disturbing that the GOP suddenly had to respond to it, basically.
Yeah.
Because I think this is a
worldwide stat.
Right. This is a worldwide stat. But basically, what we learned this week was that the richest 1% control more than half of the globe's total wealth, or will by next year.
Yes, correct. More than half. 2016 will be the first time.
1% of the world will control 50% of the wealth or more.
Yeah. And this is also disturbing because this has been a problem for a while, but between 2002 and 2010, the total wealth of the poorest half of the world was going up
at the same rate that the
1% was also like gaining wealth.
Right, everyone was gaining wealth at the same rate. It's just that the wealthy were gaining exponentially more money.
Right, but since 2010, that's been going down. Right. It's been getting wider every year.
The poor's share of the worldwide wealth is decreasing as the 1%'s share is increasing.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, the rich are getting richer, and as mathematically often happens in these situations, the poor are getting poorer as a result. Yeah. And it is a much worse sort of disparity than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
So bad that Mitt Romney got into the fray.
Etch-a-sketcher Mitt Romney.
Right.
I mean, really.
The hater of 47%.
Right, exactly. / champion of the poor?
Right, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Car elevator owner Mitt Romney.
That's right, yes.
got into the fray because I think he's realized that if he's going to run for president this time, he's going to have to make a sad and very brazenly, hypocritical
attempt.
He's going
to have to 180.
To wheel in those or get in those poor voters that didn't vote for him, because only like 18% of them voted for him in the last election.
Yeah, but he was speaking at the to a gathering of Republican National Committee officials. He's already sort of hinted that he might be willing to run again. We've talked about
he's
that
not
last
just
week,
hinted. He's basically said it.
He's basically said it, and he said he ticked off three crucial priorities that he called the, quote, post-Obama era.
Mm.
And they were making the world safer with a more muscular foreign policy. Just
whatever
what
that
need.
Means, yeah.
Providing opportunity to all Americans and lifting people out of poverty.
Mm.
Oh, that's
a
it.
A thing that Mitt Romney loves to do because he cares about the poor so much.
Yes. And you want to know what he used as one reference for how he has done this before. Being a Mormon pastor.
Yeah.
Which he totally... It's fascinating to me.
Yeah,
I think
because he totally disowned
didn't talk about it in
the Mormon church.
But he's sort of like owning it. He said that he described working with people who are very poor to help get them help when he was
I
pastor.
Would argue that he really believes in doing that from a religious private charity
I think
perspective.
That he does, yes.
Just as George Bush often felt that a church was a great place to go if you were poor to get help.
Right.
He probably doesn't believe
and
in
often,
doing that for non-Mormons
right,
in the
exactly.
way that... He probably believes that they should get help from their own church,
because everyone
has a church.
Right. Because on some level, I don't disagree with that. But not the solution for, the entire nation.
Well, it's like, where does someone like me go for help, then?
Well, right. Exactly,
you know?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's
no,
the problem
that
he... No, I know. But, that's the thing that their plan doesn't acknowledge. And I would argue that they don't think that people who don't have a church are... worth helping.
I know.
So I think that might be the secret message here. But I am surprised that he acknowledged that he's a Mormon.
It's interesting,
to
right?
To people.
Yeah, I
in
know.
Public.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mormons often aren't even doing that when they're not Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Mormons are like a very secretive bunch.
They
really don't talk about being Mormon a lot. So in any case, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Also fascinating is that even Rick Santorum was like, okay,
Mitt.
Guys, like, come on.
Like, don't be getting called out by Rick Santorum about
no,
this.
No.
I mean,
that's
come
a-
on. Yeah.
Bad one.
But he is also sort of taking on the income inequality sort of pledge himself, actually, too. But he sort of jabbed Romney. I mean, he was speaking at some place. Oh, I think this was like at a Tea Party event in South Carolina.
It was
Carolina
a Foster Freeze event.
Oh, yeah. He was. Yeah. But anyway, so he said lower or middle income folks are struggling. And guess what? Our candidate only got about 19% of that vote. We better have a party and a movement that addresses and cares about the people who are losing hope and feeling like America doesn't work for them anymore.
Words coming from
a
person who definitely won't do any of those things.
No, exactly. Well, and that's what's so interesting about this, because all the Republicans are sort of talking about this. I mean, if you take out the part where
you at least pay lip service to it, because there's no way else to get people to physically vote for you.
Yeah, exactly. If you take out the part about him talking about his own candidate, which is obviously a reference to Mitt Romney, the rest of that statement is something that Elizabeth Warren could have said.
Yeah. No, I know. That's I mean, it's good that they're going to have to at least talk about this, because I think it will become clear that their plans... It'll be like with healthcare.
Right.
The more that they've had to talk about it, the more it's become clear that they don't have a plan. Right. Their plan is just to hate everything.
Well, exactly.
And this is, making them talk about healthcare has made that clear.
Right.
If we had never had to talk about Obamacare to death, we would never have found out that they don't have a plan to replace it with.
Yeah.
This is going to be the same type of thing. Now that we're all talking about income inequality, it will become clear very soon.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
they don't have a way
of
dealing
with it. We
sort
of saw a preview of this already, because lest we forget, Paul Ryan, remember when he was going on that year-long sort of fact-finding mission about poverty?
Yes.
And then he came back with his budget, and his solution was to cut
all the services to poor people who
might have been in poverty. Right, exactly. That's what we're going to see, I think, in the presidential election, is their way to fix poverty is to just forget that it's happening,
push all the poor people aside with the bathwater.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about you, because I finally listened to that This American Life that you talked about last week on the podcast about the blind guy.
Oh, yeah,
who can
see things.
Echolocate.
Yeah.
And his, like, whole strategy, and you can understand why everyone is having trouble with this, is, like, basically to, like, throw blind kids into terrible situations, traffic, and then hope that and tell everyone not to do anything so that they can, like, learn the hard way that they can't jump into traffic. Which is the kind of thing that, like, you know, sounds like ultimately it has the right priorities, because you want people to be as independent as possible.
Right.
But you're also sort of like, if you do that to an adult blind person, like, that is, they are not going to be as malleable to,
right.
You know, like, so, like, you can't educate people in a system that is going to keep them impoverished and, like, raise people in an economy that's going to keep them impoverished and then be like, they won't succeed unless we force them to, which is going to be their plan.
Yeah, exactly.
So in any case.
Oh, boy. And he's definitely running, too, because he was, like we said, I mean, he's sort of been talking like he is anyway, but he just met with his sugar daddy Foster Freeze.
Yeah. Also, he's not busy. What's he doing?
No.
Nothing.
He hasn't been busy for a long time.
He's been
since he got blown out in his home state.
Exactly.
For, you know, in a Senate election.
He's a man who has the time and the money.
Time and money.
To run for president.
That's all you need.
That's all you need to run for president.
You don't have to have good ideas.
No, you don't.
You don't have to be engaging. You don't have to be.
You literally don't even need a college education.
You got to have a lot of money, free time, and a sweater vest.
That's right.
That's what you got to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Another
person who has all of those things is Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. He's another sweater vest fan who is thinking about running for president because he says, I don't know where this will go, but I'm definitely going to look at it. I think the world is falling apart, and I've been right more than wrong when it comes to foreign policy.
Huh.
Interesting. That's an interesting thing that he says.
Well, when you're making up sort of the facts
about
that
the world
you're being right about,
right.
I mean,
right.
I can be right about anything that I set the standards for my own rightness
It's a Fox News strategy that works for them all the time.
Yeah.
If you tell people a thing that's not a fact, it will become a fact to those people because they will have heard it from a news network. Lindsey Graham is telling himself facts, and he's like, wait a minute, I'm a senator. This has to be right.
Right. Yeah.
That's sort of what's happening.
But it's not.
So he's starting a committee, an exploratory committee.
Yeah.
I think that will be the beginning and end of his presidential ambitions.
I agree. His, of course, Senate boyfriend John McCain is really pushing him hard to do
it. Of course.
He also oddly called him his illegitimate son.
That's disgusting. I don't know what it means, but I'm grossed out by it.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm not happy about any of that imagery.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're it's like two old guys palling around.
Yeah.
I have to say palling around because that's Palin way of saying hanging out.
Yeah, that's it.
I will say that she brought Palin around into common parlance.
She did.
She is a person, I have caught myself saying Palin around repeatedly.
I say it all the time.
Yeah.
I was initially saying it to sort of mock her,
but now I'm just saying it. I'm not afraid
that
to say it.
He was palling around with terrorists, right?
Yeah, he was palling around with terrorists.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, boy.
But Obama. Now you can pal around. Now Lindsey Graham and John McCain can pal around.
They can pal around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, other electoral news.
Yes. There was a big vote this week with the Republicans in Iowa as to whether they were going to keep the straw poll going because...
It's stupid. That's why.
It's stupid.
Stupid and it means nothing.
Right. It's apparently a big moneymaker for the state party, so they're going to... They, of course, voted to keep it going. Yeah. But it's really just ridiculous.
Well, it's a waste for everyone else because everyone who participates in it has to spend $1 trillion and it's just money that wins the straw poll because at that point, it's just name recognition that wins you.
It's name recognition and it's also sort of like the organization that you do sort of on the ground there. I mean, you basically like get people to go vote for. I mean, this is not like a real election. You can basically go and coerce people to vote for you at this thing. But, you know, there's been sort of since 2011, the last time that we had it, when Michelle Bachmann won, and when 85% of the votes were won by either her or Ron Paul or Tim Pawlenty or Herman Cain or Rick Perry, John Huntsman, Thaddeus McCotter.
Thaddeus McCotter, who didn't even finally get onto the ballot.
None of those people won a state, by the way. No. And they got 85% of the vote there. Romney didn't even go. Gingrich, I think, went, like, didn't go, but well, had his name on the ballot or something like that, or whatever.
Zoo tour.
Right. He couldn't fit it into Zoo Tour. And we know that he didn't get his name on various state ballots because right. he was too lazy. Do you remember this? Like, yes. he wasn't even on the ballot,
well,
like, somewhere.
I he mean, was notoriously lazy for that. He took a 2-week vacation, like, the week that
right
he announced.
Right after he announced. Yeah. no. Yeah.
So.
But. You know, even Terry Branstad, who's the head of the Republican, I mean, he's the Republican governor of the state, right. has sort of been talking about maybe this isn't such a great idea. It really is just sort of like an exercise in, like, bringing out all the total nut jobs.
Yeah.
In, it's like, you could sort of see...
Which is why we love it.
Right. It's why we love it. I mean, you hope that it would keep going forever, just for entertainment yeah. purposes. But, I mean, it's
anything
probably...
Anything Michelle Bachmann can win, conceivably, right. is a thing that I want
it's
to
keep. It's becoming less and less a thing. And I think for that reason, everybody seems to think that it probably will stop making money at a certain point. I mean, you know, one could see a straw poll in this year where Romney, Jeb Bush... Chris Christie, like any of the sort of,
all of them,
you know,
skip it.
I'm using air quotes, thinking people,
right.
skip it, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, like, once nobody who's actually going to win a nomination is, like, going to the thing anyway, it's like,
that's
it's going to be...
That's why you keep it going, guys.
That's why...
That's
right.
where the great second string candidates get to shine.
Exactly.
Would Michelle Bachmann was way more into that, was way more in that race in 2012 than any person like her should have been.
Right.
And it was because
she won
the straw poll.
Yeah. And Tim Pawlenty dropped out after he underperformed at the Iowa
yeah,
straw poll.
Exactly.
Which
as if that had anything to do with anything. Tim Pawlenty no. probably could have been the president.
I know.
John Huntsman and Tim Pawlenty could have been a dream team
I
ticket.
I don't know. I think he has too many photos of Tim Pawlenty with a mullet, I think, unfortunately for him.
That's for Republican voters? That's a dream.
Yeah, but, yeah.
That's a dream. That's true. And I still maintain that if John Huntsman had run... He was
actually
like the world's better Mitt Romney.
Yeah,
he's just as wholesome looking, but he actually believes in climate science.
Uh-huh.
So
he's more likable too.
He's more likable. He's just like better, and he's less stiff and uncomfortable. And he rides a motorcycle.
Yeah,
the Republicans are idiots for they would have a guy who could secretly pass all their evil things because he's still evil, but would appease the left enough because
right.
he sort of vaguely thinks a little bit that everyone would have won there except for us, but everyone
right.
else who's in the middle would have won.
They would have thought they were winning.
They would have felt they were winning
yeah.
if they were not paying attention closely.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, I digress. let's move on to the California Senate race.
Yeah, more election news.
Yeah.
This
is our season. This is
yeah,
the time, guys.
This is...
The next 2 years, buckle up, because that's what we're in
yeah,
for.
Yeah, this is our wheelhouse. So you should be telling everyone that if they need any information,
right.
that this is where it's at.
Right. We may not have been the people to come to with foreign policy news
no.
back when we were reporting
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we talked a lot last year about Ukraine and Russia and
right.
the Middle East crisis, and those things, for all we
those
know at this
wheelhouse.
Point, still might be going on.
Right.
Don't care.
Don't care.
because...
Not when it's election season.
right, exactly.
Yeah. Kamala Harris announced, as we said she should.
Yes.
Like right after.
As if she had listened to the
podcast. As if she had been listening to our podcast and been like, you know what? I am the right person.
Because
to.
It was the morning that she would have listened to it that she announced.
Exactly. she's
like days after Barbara Boxer said that she was
well,
retiring.
I think she cleverly was like, okay, like every Democrat in the state suddenly had their ears perk up as soon as Barbara Boxer announced she was retiring. I better fucking get in there fast.
Yeah.
Because as soon as everyone else gets going, I'm going to be part of this jungle primary nonsense.
Yeah, a lot of people thought it was a pretty shrewd move on her
yeah.
part because there, you know, with all of these, you know, races coming up in California politics, people are going to be really trying to feel this out. And
yeah.
a lot of Democrats
well,
may want to get in.
It has to shake down before the primaries here because of the jungle system. Because
right.
if
exactly.
75 Democrats run for Barbara Boxer's seat,
right.
then we'll have a Waxman seat situation where the two people that go ahead will be like a boring, you know, whatever Democrat and a Republican
and
who
Republican.
Gets most of the vote.
Right. Because really, in theory, with the jungle primary system and California demographics, we should be having
it should be
Kamala
between,
Harris
it,
versus, like,
Antonio
let's say
Villaraigosa.
Antonio Villaraigosa,
yeah,
who's
no,
the other person who's sort of
that's
talking about it
what
right now.
Should be happening.
That's what should happen.
Right.
right.
So, in any case, we're excited about this. I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
I think that this is going to be a really interesting race. Even if
it
Daryl
is.
Issa is saying he's not going to run, which we're going to talk about in a second,
yeah.
I think it will be a high-profile race because it's an important... We can't Tom Harkin this seat.
We can't.
You know? We can't have
no.
that afford to have that happen. And it wouldn't
no.
happen in the same way here, obviously.
No.
Because we're not in a swing state. But we need to get someone good in there.
We do.
So this could be an opportunity to get something good. Elizabeth Warren sent a support email, like, the instant that
yeah,
she announced.
She did.
So we can feel good about supporting her.
Yeah.
Because we can trust Elizabeth Warren's taste.
My guess is that also... it seems to me that Barbara Boxer probably... has been either grooming her or at least sort of for her to have been out there sort of like within 48 hours. Like
they
were ready for this, which makes me sort of believe that this is who Barbara Boxer wants to do it.
Yeah. And I trust her taste.
Good. that's it.
Can you imagine if Elizabeth Warren does become the candidate and then the two of them are running around California? That's like a real dream team situation.
Sure is.
God.
Yeah.
Can't even. Because that's where, I mean, this is the reason that this is going to be exciting is not because we're worried that a Republican takes this seat or whatever.
Right.
It's because California is where all the money is in a presidential season.
Yeah.
So the races in California have sort of like outsized weight because they're part of this like crazy money operation.
Right. Well, and it also is really expensive to run a Senate race here. Anyway, yeah, just because it's huge. We have a lot of expensive media markets.
Exactly.
So you really have to, despite the fact that the Democrats usually win, you really have to,
you have to try.
You have to try.
And especially with the jungle primary system, it's just going to be interesting. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun.
Right.
And I'm trying to get a job with them. So if you're listening, guys, and your press office is hiring, I want it.
There's a few interesting sort of wild cards here, though, because For obvious reasons, there are a lot of people who are going to want, you know, sort of three statewide offices because a lot of people think Dianne Feinstein is going to retire, although maybe not because she's already 81.
She's 81. What does she have to lose by staying forever?
You know, she may Strom Thurmond and just be 112 and then, like, die in the Senate.
And here, women live longer than men, guys. So she could out Strom Thurmond him.
Right. And Jerry Brown is not running for re-election in 2018. So her seat is up in 2018. So there could be two high-profile seats in 2018. There are a lot of people who sort of are being talked about as, you know,
potentials for one of those
seats. For one of these. Like Loretta Sanchez, who's not huge high-profile, but she has sort of like already hinted. She's a congresswoman from Orange County. She's pretty popular. A lot of people have... She's also Hispanic.
Could do well in at least Southern California. I think she would be...
She's been talking about
but
this...
Probably
this She's been talking about Boxer's seat. Another sort of wild card is Tom Steyer, who is a billionaire environmentalist. He's spent a lot. He spent like $75 million of his own money in the recent midterm elections to support people who, you know, were environmental platforms.
But he's written this like op-ed for HuffPo that kind of hints that he might be looking to run.
And then there's of course Antonio Villaraigosa, and then also Eric Garcetti, who has said he's not running for Barbara Boxer's. He's our current mayor here in Los Angeles.
It'd be kind of a dick move of him to run.
But a lot of
people
think he has. People have thought of him as a person with statewide
intentions.
The Garcettis and Gavin Newsom
are kind of a dynasty here,
right? Exactly. There's too many people for the potential three
seats
statewide.
So there's going to be some excitement,
right? Exactly. Like these people are going to have to go head to head in whatever sort of race they decide to get into because there's too many of them.
Exactly.
And they're all good candidates.
Yeah. No.
On some level,
at least reasonable candidates.
Right. Exactly.
And Villaraigosa, I think. You know, it is hard to overcome the curse of a big city mayorship. You really rarely move on from those. New York City has the same problem where the mayor of New York City is basically a dead-end job.
Right.
You don't become the governor after that. You just become a rich person who now is working in whatever financial field you made connections with while you were in the while you were at Gracie Mansion. Like, that is sort of a problem here as well. Like, our mayors don't really, like, move on to greatness.
It's true.
And so Villaraigosa is, we're kind of running against the current.
Well, and
this.
He sort of has an interesting sort of resume on some level, too, because he was obviously the mayor of Los Angeles, which, and he's also Hispanic. And so that sort of, like, gets you a certain amount of, like, you know,
cred here.
But also, he sort of didn't leave office with, like, the greatest popularity. Well, he was the mayor during the bad economic times here in Los Angeles, which wasn't necessarily his fault.
Right.
But, you know, he's not... He sort of had... People have mixed reviews of Villaraigosa.
Well, I was going to say, he's not uniformly loved
no,
in
he's
L.A.,
not. He's
where
not.
People actually know who he is.
Right.
So, that his record is going to be a little bit of a challenge, because there's a lot of resentment against him here. I mean, he was a mayor who L.A. Magazine put a cover with him in the word failure over his...
That's right.
I mean, it wasn't just smooth sailing when he was in office.
It wasn't.
And I think... But he's feeling out this Senate race, I think. And I think maybe things are looking worse for him if Kamala Harris is like legit running this early, because I feel like she's sort of, first of all, she has a lot less controversial of a record because she's never been in that kind of elected office before.
Right.
So she hasn't really had to manage all of those things. And he can claim that that's, you know, experience that he has. But ultimately, that's not really experience you need as a senator.
Right.
She's a law background. Like, that's...
Right,
you know.
Exactly. A lot of people seem to think that, you know, he's talking about this Barbara Boxer Senate seat. A lot of people seem to think that his best chance is maybe to run against Gavin Newsom, who will probably run for governor, because that's sort of... He's the lieutenant governor now, and he's got some baggage. He's still well-liked, but that... A lot of people seem to think that that could be maybe the race where he could sort of, like, make some headway. Yeah. But... I don't know, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And he doesn't, and he probably is not going to want to run against Garcetti, because that's sort of like the same base of Los Angeles voters.
Exactly.
And Garcetti is probably going to run for something statewide in 2018. So that they actually just met this week.
Right.
Next story is about their strategy.
Right.
Exactly. We don't know exactly what came from that, but it makes sense that they sort of try and figure out what they're going to do, because it doesn't make sense for them to run in the same race.
No. I have a theory about what Villaraigosa should do. I know that when you're the mayor of a large city, it seems like you should then be like the governor after that. Like, you should somehow be in control of a bigger...
Yeah.
I think that if you're the mayor of a large city and you want to get into big city politics, not big city, but like, you know, the big fish politics, I think you run for Congress. Because you basically are working with the same voters. You know, you run for a congressional seat in New York.
In Los Angeles, where you are already the mayor of. I mean...
Brain fuck am I? I mean, like, but but I think, you know, and I don't know, you know, what seats are... I don't think a lot of seats are opening up anytime soon, but at least that's every 2 year kind of proposition. Right. So you have a little bit more of a chance to find something there. I feel like you can win one of those races just on name recognition, too,
a lot of times. Like, you... I mean...
That, and then from Congress, you run for Senate. But I don't see there being relevant, like, crossover between being a senator and being the mayor of Los Angeles. I see why that would apply to being governor, but I also think that there are more high-profile people who possibly have sort of, like, a little bit more statewide cred than he does to do that job. And I think also you have a disadvantage if you're from Southern California, because that's not near the Capitol.
No.
I think the Bay Area... big electeds over there get a little bit more credibility because they have a little bit more of a connection to Sacramento than
they do.
So we're like running our own country down here. Like, LA is like the size of a country and it's crazy. And you don't have time to deal with state politics anyway, because there's so much going on over here and everything's weird. So like, I feel like from his position, especially with his sort of record of not everyone super loving him down here, that maybe he aims a little lower.
Hey.
Sorry, Villaraigosa.
I know, right?
It's just how I feel.
Yeah. Well, he's been out of office for a while, too.
Yeah.
And if he waits until 2018, he'll have been out of office for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so that hurts, too. I mean, the name recognition sort of, like, starts to lose its luster the longer that you're not doing something.
Exactly. So, but it will be interesting if he decides to jump into that race with Kamala Harris.
I think that
that could be a fascinating
race. I mean, depending on what happens, there's no reason why he couldn't at least get himself to the general at that point.
No.
I mean, to get second, or maybe even win. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting.
I mean, I think he would draw a sort of more moderate... He's sort of like a Clintonian Democrat. So he doesn't really, like... I think Kamala Harris, even if she doesn't actually, like, espouse far-left ideas, will be the kind of person who feels sort of like an Obama wave of type of person. Because she's sort of part of his, you know, like, cohort of people.
Right.
Like, they have talked about appointing her to judgeships and things like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like she gets sort of like an excited young vote in a way that he doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, he gets the, like, annoying Democrats.
Well, and interestingly, I would have disagreed with you a while ago.
Right.
Because he was really...
He was sort of being groomed for the same
thing. Right, and I have good memories of him just personally, because he was a real champion for gay rights.
Right.
And against Prop 8 when he was in office. And that was huge because, A, we needed it, and B, he was Hispanic.
Right.
And that is a community that we needed the help with.
Exactly.
And so, you know, he was always at the gay pride festivals. He was kicking off the AIDS walk. And so, like, for that reason, like, that was always would have made me feel like that maybe he would get sort of, like, the younger and the cooler and the hipper vote. But that is just sort of, like,
not an issue anymore.
Yeah. It's just sort of, it's not something to run on anymore, because as of June, which is a story we'll get to in a few minutes,
we
may be able to get gay married in all 50 states.
Exactly.
So it's not a platform anymore.
And it's one of those things where, like, those are the types of politicians that make me furious. They're sort of like the Cuomo politicians, where, like, they're actually kind of assholes, but they're like, oh, I care about gay people. So gay people are like, I'll vote for you because you care about gay people.
Right.
You're screwing me over in every other possible way, and I don't care.
I
love you. You know, like, but I think that at least when we move on from that issue, we will find that a lot of people that we thought were far left champions are actually Republicans. And he's going to be one of those people that we're going to learn that about, because he's sort of like a Clintonite.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what Republicans do run, though, because it's obviously an uphill battle to win a statewide election here.
Right, but, and Daryl Issa had been talking about running, and now he's kind of...
Right, well, he ran...
This would be a foolish move, because this is not a great race for a Republican. Don't be a guy with name recognition running in this race. Be a guy who can hide afterwards.
I think what you could do as a Daryl Issa type of person is that, A, he can run for the Senate, I would assume, and the House at the same time. He's in a safe House seat, don't you think?
I don't think you can.
I think you can.
No,
can't
because you can't be
you
on the ballot pick? For both. You have to pick.
Oh, he does have to pick.
He loses
because
his House
He's in Congress for life.
Right.
So he doesn't have to run. But he tried once, though, and he was basically the man behind, he was wanted to be governor when we were, you know, doing the whole recall situation.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, like, he does have statewide ambitions. He tried in 98. He ran in the primary and spent $10 million of his own money to try and run against Boxer.
Yeah.
He didn't even win that primary, which is kind of sad. But
No, I think what you do if you're him is you run in the primary and then you get kicked out and then you're like, oh, thank God, I'll just go take my House seat now.
Right.
I don't think, though, that you can run for
both of
those in the general.
You're right.
You can run for
president and still be on the ballot to, like, keep a Senate
like
seat
Senate
or whatever
seat.
Or something
but
like
you
that.
Can't, but I don't think that you can run for House and Senate at the
same
time.
I think you're probably right.
Because you couldn't serve both of those at the same time, so it'd just be chaos.
you couldn't win both of those races. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think he's... Don't be Daryl Issa and have statewide ambitions here. This is not a state where someone like him... can have statewide ambitions.
I know we've had
weird dissents into Republicanism here, but very moderate Republicanism is where we draw the line.
Right, exactly.
We don't get into Daryl Issa territory.
No,
he's too crazy.
A Benghazi truther, and he's he's too nuts.
Like, sorry, you are in the wrong state.
Right, he's from a conservative part of the state, so he can get away with it
and
keep winning his House race. But
you'll have a nice pension, it'll be lovely for you. But this is not a state where you should even think that that's a possibility for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and if you are thinking that, then you deserve to lose your safe House seat.
Exactly.
Because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Anyway, the State of the Union is this week.
Right.
It's the day that you will be listening to this podcast. So if you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday and thinking, what should I do tonight? The answer is, watch the State of the Union.
Watch the State
of
the Union.
Not because it will be interesting.
Right. And if you miss the State of the Union, don't miss the Republican response to the State of the Union.
You have one responsibility here.
Right.
And it is not really to watch the State of the Union. It is to know the references to the State of the Union that will become, like, hashtags tomorrow.
Right.
You know.
And
like,
to watch Joni
what
Ernst.
What is it? Bayonets or...
Oh, yeah.
Horses and bayonets or whatever, you know, like things like that. You want to know what was going on. But your major responsibility here is to watch Joni Ernst deliver the Republican response.
Right.
I cannot wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Every year they do something hilariously wrong. There
they
was
do.
The Marco was Rubio water sip. There was Bobby Jindal just...
Right, making a sort of, like, grand entrance. Remember
right,
he had
yeah.
sort of, like, that weird thing and then talked really weird?
Really weird.
Talked,
why did he talk so weird? It was so weird.
I don't know.
It was so weird.
A lot of people thought that that State of the Union response that he gave literally sunk... his chances for national office, at least at that
did.
Time.
It did. I mean, he could come back from that. Yeah.
Removed now, but I mean, it was just too bonkers.
It was too bonkers. And
they actually
then after that, you have to watch the Tea Party response because you remember when Michelle Bachmann didn't look at
couldn't
camera.
Look at the camera. I know. They actually did it on Meet the Press. They did this funny thing and they went like way back because like a lot of people have like given the response to this and basically they were comparing it to the Sports Illustrated curse, which I don't know if you know what that is.
I
but
don't.
Basically, like if whenever someone like does something really great, they get like the Sports Illustrated cover. And then inevitably, whatever their big thing is after the Sports Illustrated cover, they like totally blow. So it's like, you know,
you
like
do not want the Sports Illustrated
no,
cover.
No, someone will win like a big like football game and then they'll like be on the Sports Illustrated cover and then they will get like throttled in the Super Bowl the next week, basically. Like this is a thing.
This is a thing.
And they did a thing on Meet the Press with that, like going all the way back to like Bob McDonnell has done it before.
Oh,
he's about
you're
to be
right.
in prison. You know, like a lot of people have sort of like gone on to
have a fall from grace.
Fall from grace.
A post.
Right. Which makes me wonder if maybe that's what their plan is for Joni Ernst.
One can only hope.
But it's interesting because she's an interesting choice because she sort of had the backing of establishment Republicans and Tea Party Republicans.
Yeah.
Obviously she's
what
not.
What are the establishment people thinking?
I don't know.
Not thoughts.
No.
That's a thing we know.
I think I heard an interesting theory also on Meet the Press this morning was that she is from Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
We have That's presidential right. politics coming up. And they also couldn't venture into picking someone who is maybe going to be a presidential candidate.
Right.
Because they sort of didn't want to get into venturing into, like, picking one of those people.
Before anyway. Because they've ruined the ambitions of every potential presidential candidate they've ever had.
Exactly. But she's, you know, I mean, she's a total wingnut, as we know. I mean, she's got crazy UN theory. She's got crazy
She declared that... As we said last week, her title is going to be conspiracy theorist Joni Ernst from now on this podcast.
She declared that...
Not there, U.S. There were, Congressman or Senator.
Right, exactly. She declared that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, just recently. Right. I mean, just this is a woman who
facts
is
that we
of,
know are not true are right, being exactly. declared by her.
So, interesting choice.
Yeah,
I'm curious. She also has a weird laugh. I don't know if you've seen those lines of her laughing. Like, she has a really wacky laugh. So, I feel like there's
no way she doesn't do something wacky. She's inexperienced in this.
She's really inexperienced. You know. A couple years ago, she was a state senator in Iowa. I mean, she went from state legislator
and
to
United States Senate. We're talking about state senator in a state with, like, 17 people in it. Not state senator in California.
Yeah, she was
California.
From Western Iowa, which is where you where get you, elected by having the exactly. crazy conspiracy theories. I mean, she's a nut.
There's not even there's not people in Western Iowa. Like, the people live in Eastern Iowa.
Correct.
The and conspiracy Central Iowa, right. and Central the conspiracy theorists live in Western Iowa,
right, which is basically Nebraska,
which is Nebraska,
not what you're waiting for.
Exactly.
At all. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is going to be exciting, and it's very important that you tune in for that.
Yeah. Some guy named Kurt Clausen of Florida is giving the Tea Party response. Don't know who he is, but he sounds awful.
He sounds like a terrible person.
I don't trust people
Florida.
With names
like
that have alliteration
Clausen.
Like that.
No. No, and Clausen, like Clausson, not like Clausson.
Right.
So, you know, not it's like an Ellis Islandization of a name.
Yeah,
that's a weird one.
Yeah.
Also, Marco Rubio fighting progress the old-fashioned way by bringing a guest who will provide some sort of act of empty symbolism at the State of the Union.
Yeah,
he's pissed about all this Cuba stuff. We're going to talk next about the Cuba travel ban situation.
This is the thing that people are doing. Like Ted Nugent got brought, I think, 1 year, and like the guy from
that's
Duck
a man
Dynasty,
who threatened to kill the president.
Right, Duck Dynasty guy, I think, got brought.
Like
1 year.
What you so do if you're pissed at the president is you bring some sort of symbolic guest with you to the State of the Union, who then you can talk about on media the days before and after to talk about whatever pet issue you want.
Right.
In this case, he's bringing Rosa Maria Paya, who is the daughter of a political dissident in Cuba who was killed in a car crash in 2012, but people think that, or it's like sort of considered to be a hit. Basically.
Right, that he was killed, right.
And they're not investigating it in Havana because they're probably like, nah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Because he was a dissident, so he was annoying to them.
Yeah.
So Marco Rubio is bringing her. Now, that is in addition to Alan Gross being at the State of the Union, who's the guy that we got released as a political prisoner in Cuba.
Right. Yeah.
He will also be there. So there's a lot of Cuba symbolism going on.
Yeah.
He's a symbol of unity, though, because his retrieval, is sort of like what prompted all of these changes to policy that we're going to talk about right now. Because on Thursday, the Commerce Department and the Treasury Department released new rules about travel restrictions and export opportunities.
Yeah, they're easing the travel restrictions.
The travel restrictions are easing in a pretty significant way. You still need a license to go to Cuba, and you still need to fit within one of the license categories for, like, you know, you can't go as a tourist. You have to go for, like, cultural exchange or to be a journalist or whatever.
Right.
But the big change, and this is not something everyone's really confused about this because not everyone has really, like, had to deal with the license system as it was.
Yeah.
But you used to actually have to have a license that you, like, applied for and got, and it was, like, a whole pain in the ass. And, you know, because of that, your travel arrangements were always made last minute, and it was, like, enormous.
Right,
to get on those chartered flights that go from New York and Miami, you had to have an actual license to show them.
Yeah.
Now, it's going to be sort of honor system.
Right.
And, like, Cuba doesn't care. They're not trying to not let you in Cuba. You can just go to Cuba if you are a person. In Cuba, they'll just be like, hello. It's the American side where they can fine you for having gone. You will basically, if they audit you, you'll have to provide proof that you went for one of the reasons listed under the general license.
Right.
But it's not going to be like before where you had to get the license beforehand.
Right.
So it means that a lot of people who want to just go on sort of like general group trips to Cuba with companies that are that are providing some sort of cultural exchange opportunity or whatever, those people can just go. So a lot of tour groups will suddenly be able to go to Cuba.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be interesting because Cuba does not have the infrastructure to handle this influx of tourism. And I can personally attest that their hotels are not super nice. The Hotel Nacional is really nice, but that's the only nice hotel in Cuba. So so that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
They now can sort of essentially do like an Airbnb-style thing there where they made it legal for you to rent out your own home.
Oh, interesting.
So that could be an interesting thing because that will also be an influx of private money, which I don't know. The U.S. is like real keen on making people do that, but I don't know how that's going to handle what's going to go on in Cuba because of that.
Well, and also American companies can now also, they're permitted to export telephones and computers and internet technology down there too.
So now electronics can be exported to Cuba, and tourists are allowed to bring back $100 worth of tobacco and alcohol products, which is what everyone was really in the game
for.
That's
what they were going
because
for.
Now you can bring Cuban cigars.
Yeah,
back.
Cigars.
Now, little known fact, it was legal to bring back a certain amount of Cuban cigars if you went on a licensed trip before. Because I brought back cigars the first time that I went. Oh. I've been three times, twice was unlicensed, but once, the first time, was licensed, and I was able to bring back cigars that time. Then I realized I don't know anybody who smokes cigars, and I had these cigars just like sitting around my house for like ever, and everyone was mad at me because they were like, "You have Cubans in your house?" And I was like, "Are you going
to smoke?
You want
it?
One?" Like, and that's a good thing. People shouldn't smoke.
No.
Smoking is bad for you. But you're allowed to bring back $400 in total goods, $100 in alcohol and tobacco products. And then the real sort of tourism pressure is coming from airlines, because a lot of airlines want to start flying
there.
And I know JetBlue was talking about this in the press all week, but United and Delta also were talking about trying to figure out how they could fly down there. Currently, I think American is the one that operates the charter flights. I think I flew American when I went down there direct. And so I think a lot of companies are trying to get in the game because, like, that's a brilliant short hop, easy tourist destination.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to not go there. But, you know, we don't yet have an agreement that would allow us to do that. So they're working on that. And ultimately, like, the embargo, the fate of the embargo rests with Congress. Like, Obama can't cancel the embargo. And Congress, in this Congress, is probably not going to stop the embargo. So he's sort of, like, working.
Well, and it also depends on, you know, what Cuba itself decides on some of these things too.
Right,
I mean,
sure.
We need, it's not all,
I mean,
on
I think
here,
ultimately,
but.
Like, they, I think Cuba is sort of like well versed in controlling how much they want to be open to these things. So, like, they, because they are open, they work with European companies in investment, you know, like in tourism investment all the
time.
That's
what I think so many Americans don't realize is because we have had so little dealings directly with them since, you know, the 50s.
They have restrictions to prevent us from going and taking over the whole country.
Right, exactly. They remember what that was like. And also, you know, people have, the rest of the world basically goes there, you know,
for vacation.
For vacation sometimes. I mean, maybe not as much as you might go somewhere else.
No, but
I mean,
my last
you can
trip
go there.
There, I sat next to an 18-year-old whose graduation present from her parents was a trip to Cuba because she wanted to go to the beach.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe I'm going to have to do all this fucking volunteer work and you're going to a beach vacation for the same amount of time. Right. And then you're going to come home with a suntan and I'm going to come home exhausted with food poisoning. And it's because I have to go do all this fucking volunteer work and like stay in like a labor camp.
Yeah.
Like that was unfair to me. But but that, I mean, that's when you go fly from Toronto or whatever, half the flight is filled with tourists who are just going because the beaches there are beautiful.
Yeah.
Some of the nice, I've never been to nicer beaches than I've been to in Cuba. Partially because they're not totally built up. So, like, they have that beautiful, clear Caribbean water, and it's not like Cancun, where you also sense that everything might be gross. But it's, anyway. So things are slowly opening. They're expecting, like, a huge influx of tourism there because there's a huge amount of interest here in going there. And especially before U.S. companies do figure out how to take over the whole country, which they will because
they're
evil. Yeah. And they've done it everywhere else in Latin America, so I don't see why they would stop with Cuba.
Exactly.
But we also had talks this week with Cuba for the first time, or high-level diplomatic talks for the first time.
It was the first time in
three decades. Roberta Jacobson, who is a top diplomat in Latin America for the State Department, went to go to try. There are restrictions on the Cuba end as far as how many high-level diplomats and diplomatic personnel can come to Cuba. And so they want to lift those restrictions because they want to open an embassy there.
Yeah.
And they also want Cuba's permission to open an embassy instead of just having like this interest section that operates there. But that could also be a step in a good direction.
Yeah.
But yeah, in Cuba, they maintain a controlling interest in big investment projects.
Yeah.
So it's not like companies will be able to go there and be like, I'm going to open a hotel and I will own that land and hotel. Cuba will, and this is something that happened in Venezuela also. This is something that socialists are doing, where they were sort of like they have welcomed European investment to a large extent to build up some of their tourism infrastructure.
Yeah.
But they will not allow those companies to have a controlling interest in the company.
Got it.
And that's partially why this progress has been slow,
but
also why they haven't totally lost control of what's going on there.
Sure.
In any case, moving on to the environment.
Yes.
Because our American hero Bernie Sanders is doing what heroes
do. Just totally burned the Republicans this week because, as we know, the Republicans got down to important things and passed the Keystone Pipeline, you know,
most important thing. Who cares about income inequality?
Right, exactly.
Oil needs to be flowing underground that we won't even get to use.
So Obama has promised to veto this. So to try and override the veto, Mitch McConnell still needs some more votes to get in the Senate to be able to bypass that. So what he did...
Democratic votes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He proposed an open amendment process to basically drum up bipartisan support so everybody could put all of their own terrible things in there and then decide to pass it because they would have other things that they wanted attached to the Keystone Bill.
Right.
Basically. So Senator Bernie Sanders took him up on it.
Yeah.
And he is planning to introduce, well, he's actually reintroducing it, but his a sense of Congress resolution that simply aims or affirms climate change is real, caused by the burning of fossil fuels, and must be addressed.
Yeah.
So
it's basically, in order to vote on Keystone, people will have to vote and say that they know that climate change is real.
Yeah.
And that it has that it's a problem.
And that humans and that and it's that, problems and that humans
and that we
are
need
creating
to fix it.
It. Right.
So which is,
good.
And in the wording in the actual amendment is that Congress is in agreement with the opinion of virtually the entire worldwide scientific community, and climate change has already caused devastating problems in the United States and around the world.
Right.
Like, he's taking no prisoners.
They're going to have to vote yes on that to pass the Keystone Pipeline Bill, which is just...
Except that they won't, because it will get booted out, because this amendment has already been held up in committee once before.
Yeah.
And they have a history of doing this, because Amy Klobuchar got one of her resolutions blocked last July because... Because James Inhofe, who's
an asshole
climate change denier, objected to it. So this resolution was in another incarnation, was already tabled last week in committee. So it definitely also will not pass. Like, the Keystone Bill will not pass with this attached, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because 70% of the Republican Senate doesn't believe in climate change. If you are wondering what percentage of Republican senators are denying a thing that is known by anyone who believes in facts and truth, it is 70%.
That's upsetting.
Well, and what's extra upsetting, actually, is that of moderate Republicans, the statistic is switched. So 70% of moderate Republicans do believe that climate change is real, but 70% of Republicans as a whole do not.
Yeah, boy.
So there is, like, we're being held captive by a wingnut group of nonsense thinkers who are just holding up everything based on a make-believe thing that they thought of, where they won't take responsibility for anything.
Yikes.
Good work, Bernie. You're a hero.
Yeah.
SCOTUS, as was announced this week by, and if you are on the internet, you probably heard about this. Or maybe not be. Here's the thing. I forget that not everyone on the internet only knows gay people.
I know. It's so true,
so,
right?
Sometimes when this kind of news breaks, I'm like, oh, it's all anyone's been talking about all week. What about poverty, guys? And then I realize... it's just because my entire Facebook feed is populated by gay people. Yeah, so it could be that you didn't know about this, and if you don't, here's some news.
And if there's one thing that gay people care about, it's gay
news.
It's
gay people. Yeah, it's gay news.
It's the only thing,
oftentimes. The only thing.
Yep.
But so, SCOTUS is planning to rule on gay marriage this year.
Yes. They're going to rule on it in June, and...
people think they're going to say it's legal. Because, like, what are they going to say? No?
Yeah, I mean, all signs point... I mean, they've sort of have been on the...
They've already upheld it before, and all the lower courts have upheld it, essentially.
Right, exactly. And
like, what legal precedent do they have to
and,
not uphold it?
And the person that everyone sort of thinks would be the swing on this is Kennedy, like he always is. And he has written some pretty scathing, you know, responses to...
some of the crazy nonsense,
Right, exactly. So, I mean, he seems to be on the side of favoring this. I mean, he is really, and also when you read transcripts of, like, he really questions people hard as to why, like, this would, you know, like,
he
really
also
gave it to some of the people in the Prop 8 cases who were, like, arguing about...
Historically, he has not been someone who's wanted to make big political statements in that court.
Right.
He's the only person, in fact, hasn't wanted to make big, like, he's kind of an asshole and kind of a curmudgeon, but... he has time and again sort of been the deciding vote in cases where it would be a huge political statement if he voted the other way.
Yeah. This is another thing, too, that, you know, I mean, they don't sort of... 60% of people is what the polling is now that favor this. So,
like, there's no reason to go back, turn that... And you know who gains the most from this? As even the New York Times pointed out this week. Republicans. Because this is a huge landmine for them. Because now that most of the country is sort of either like, I don't care, or I support this thing, they look like ridiculous people because they're beholden to these wackos on the right who insist that they constantly talk about this dumb issue that ultimately no one cares about.
I would say if this happens, they're going to have to talk about it more in 2016 mm-hmm. than they would have
than they would have ever had
because like, they're it's all their base is going to care about and they're going to really have to everybody's going to have to be on record
as
in 2016 about what they think about this
and it's going to be a landmine. But here's the thing is that moderate Republicans are going to finally get to be like, you know what, it's over. And so now we can talk about whatever dumb things we talk about. Right. The far right crazy town people are going to be like the abortion people. They're never going to shut up. Yeah. You know, they reference Roe v. Wade a lot in this because they thought that when they ruled on Roe v. Wade, everyone would be like, okay, we live in a country where abortion is legal. Moving on. But instead, everyone just got nuts for the last 40 years. And it's just been like working themselves into increasing amounts of panic about it.
Right.
And like on the far right, that will definitely happen over this issue.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it will sort of neutralize it for the middle. Because there's a lot of people, and I've maintained this for a long time. There are people on the far right that care about this who don't even know any gay people. So, like, how this affects them, no one will ever find out.
Right.
I think there's a lot of people on the right who, like, really don't care about this. Like,
oh, I think
that they have to because that's, like, a social thing. Like, you have to care about the
things. But they're tired of it. They're just as tired of it as
If you don't know any gay people, what does this have to do with you? Nothing.
Yeah.
And if you do know gay people, who do you, what do you care if they marry somebody? If you know a gay person, likely you believe that they should get to marry whoever they want. Because if you know a gay person, then you can realize that they're human. If you don't know a gay people... What does this have to do with anything? This has nothing to do with anything. At least with the abortion issue, all of these people actually know women.
That's true.
You know?
Like, well, and it's like you have always said, you know, if you are against abortion, don't get an abortion. If you are against gay marriage, then don't get gay married.
No one will ever force you to.
No.
But, yeah, it's this is, like, the kind of thing where I think probably a lot of the Republican base is sort of... It's making them unelectable in certain places where there's sort of, like, a more swing, statey kind of atmosphere. And I feel like they could... They could stand to gain a lot from just not having to talk
not
about this anymore. And so, I think a lot of seats, that would be the case if this happened, where suddenly they'd be like, well, it's over, so thank God we don't have to care anymore. Moving on to other evil things that were on, you know, and then everyone can be excited about those things. Tax cuts. They love tax cuts.
Yeah.
If they didn't have to talk about gay marriage so much, maybe they could talk more about tax cuts.
Yeah.
And then maybe fewer Democrats would have to conveniently be confused about what they think about anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they've only talked about gay marriage, and that's it. They're going to be evil regardless.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think that a lot of their base knows that this is a losing issue. And so they're sort of like, how do we get ourselves out of this situation?
Yeah, I think you're right.
In any case, other exciting news.
Yeah.
Cuomo.
Your home state.
In my home state, Cuomo is announcing a proposal to raise the minimum wage in New York. And here's what I find exciting about it. Although the way he did this is kind of dickish, but he's a dick. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
He's proposing to raise the minimum wage to $10.50 in the state and $11.50 in New York City.
Interesting.
And I'm very much in favor of them having different minimum wages in New York City because
they should have to.
So much more expensive. Like egregiously more expensive.
Yeah.
And
a lot of cities are sort of like dealing with, you know, minimum wage themselves. And I mean, we saw Seattle sort of did this, you know.
SeaTac, a town that has nothing in it but an airport, has a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, exactly. So I like this.
Yeah.
This is good.
No, and so this was a thing that de Blasio talked about. And Cuomo was sort of like, you asshole, we're never going to block, you know, he didn't say asshole, but he was sort of like, we're never going to let the city determine their own thing. This is a big sort of like, larger issue in New York State, where the state controls a lot of things that have to do with money in New York City. A lot of financial policy, a lot of tax policy has to be approved by the state to go into effect. So, like, when we lost the commuter tax, the state has to approve reinstating the commuter tax. The state's never going to approve that because half the state is made up of commuters who commute into New York City. So, like, we lost that and now it's gone forever. This is sort of a similar thing where de Blasio, when he was running, was like, we should have a higher minimum wage in New York City because it's so expensive. And Cuomo was like, that'll never happen. This has to be determined at the state level, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But now I think he's realized that in order to appease the left, because the left sort of hates him, he, you know, this is one of his little issues, like approving gay marriage and things like that.
Exactly.
Like, he sort of picks these little issues to get involved in. He was sort of like, okay, I see how you might want a higher minimum wage in New York City. As long as the state is in control, it's fine. So he has decided that it is okay to propose a higher minimum wage in New York State. I mean, in New York City, and that is very exciting. It would be one of the highest minimum wages in the country if it got passed.
Right.
We have a Republican Senate in New York State.
Yeah.
That is not a great thing. I think it's possible, and I will tell you why. Because Cuomo is, if he's good at anything, he's a good deal maker.
Sure.
He can get the Republican Senate to vote on things that they do not want to vote on. So I feel like if anyone could get this passed in a Republican Senate, it's him. It's not the national Senate. You know, it's not that kind of Senate.
And
I
bet there are a lot of New York Republicans who are maybe not as against this
as they
some
would like to.
National Republicans probably are.
Well, and they're not beholden. You know, there's some mouth breather areas of New York State, but generally the Republican culture there is a little bit less wild and crazy than it is in, or at least the sort of controlling interest in the Republican Party there. So I feel like it's possible. I'm just excited that someone is allowing for the fact that New York City is not the same place as New York State and that they should have two different financial policies there because otherwise it's unfair to people in New York City who pay most of their fucking tax dollars to people in upstate New York so that they can have great schools or whatever they're up to. I don't know. In any case, that's exciting. The Working Families Party was like, it's not enough, but...
Well, it's not, but I'm in.
But it's something. Hey, it's currently something. Like 825 or something, so like this would be a huge
Well, it's
benefit.
Interesting, too, because there's already a law on the books that is sort of still in effect.
Right, it's going to go
raise
up to 9
the minimum
in
wage
2016.
Right now. So they would sort of have to, you know, I mean, this would sort of supersede that and raise it further, which would be good, obviously.
Well, that's what
but
I think basically he
already...
realized is it was going to go up to 9, and he was like, well, that's comically low.
That's
too low. Yeah. You can't live on $9 an hour, and even in upstate New York, you can't do that. So that's exciting.
Oh boy, Fox News
is—it's happening. It's out
as
there.
As you mentioned it earlier, Fox News makes up a fact,
and then they run with it.
Right.
Proof of that this week.
That's what happened this week. Although this week they apologized for it, which they're not always up to.
This was crazy.
It was too crazy.
It was too crazy.
It was one of those things where, like, even if you are an idiot, wacko, wingnut, nut job person who watches Fox News 24 hours a day, you would hear this and you would think to yourself,
That's
not right.
Yeah.
Could that possibly not be right?
Yeah.
Like, you would just have to, as a person with a brain and the proper amount of chromosomes.
Yeah. You would have a healthy amount of suspicion about this.
Because basically what they said, they were talking a lot this week about Muslim-only no-go zones throughout Europe in countries like England and France that are not under the control of the state and that are ruled by Sharia law and where no people who are not Muslims go. Which
it's not a real thing.
Is not a real thing.
Well, and you know why they apologized. It is because a sort of Daily Show style comedy show in France basically started reporting on it.
Well, and the British Prime Minister commented on it.
But they apologized because they got embarrassed by a bunch of videos that were released by a French comedy show.
Yeah.
They got Daily Showed into apologizing.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
The claim starts with this guy, Steve Emerson, who the Times describes as a self-described expert on Islamic terrorism. So I don't know what his qualifications even were.
Yeah.
He was talking to Janine Pirro, and he said that there are parts of France and Birmingham in England that are totally Muslim, where non-Muslims simply don't go in, and where Sharia courts are set up, and the Muslim density is very intense, and the police don't go in, so it's basically like a separate country.
Right.
Got ridiculed on Twitter and was forced to apologize, but when he apologized, Fox News was like, whatever, he doesn't work for us, he can say whatever he wants.
We're gonna go with it.
Right. So then this television host, Yann Barthès, or Barthez, I don't know, it's French.
Sure,
Barthez, probably, because H's are sound like that, right? He starts he has this comedy program called Le Petit Journal, and just started finding example after example of other people on Fox News making the same claim.
Yes.
Because they were sort of like, we didn't say it. This guy that doesn't work for us said it on our air. We
but
can't
then they
control
kept saying
that.
It all week.
But then they kept repeating it as if it was a fact because they'd heard it from a self-described expert.
Fox and Friends put a map up of where these areas are. Yeah. Basically, I mean, they were
this
truly
is like
making
Brent
it up.
And I going on television because we're self-described experts in, like, math.
Right.
Like, we're not experts in math.
No.
We're just two people who took high school math.
We can make up any old wacko thing we want about Sharia law in Birmingham,
exactly.
England. I mean, that is just wacko.
That's wacko.
I think that something like 22% of Birmingham, England, like, in the latest census that they have is Muslim.
Yeah.
So it's like a high percentage, but it's
that's outrageous.
78% of people are not Muslim in that city. So it is definitely not a Muslim no-go zone. And I doubt they're using Sharia law. I mean,
something tells me that
not.
In England, they're not trying to get involved in that.
No, they're not.
That's, this was a sort of disturbing week for people saying crazy things about Muslims on the internet. Partially because I have a bunch of Facebook friends who are Muslim who've been posting a lot of articles about this. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have caught it in the press because the press is not talking about it. But people have been saying some really disturbing things
about
Muslims.
No, there's been a lot of
Muslims.
It, especially in Europe, too.
Well, part of this discussion about the shooting is that, you know, it has been so much more socially acceptable to say outrageous things and have outrageous comments about Muslims than it has been, you know, like... They have censored in the past cartoons about Jews in the same paper. And, like, understandably, because they don't have the greatest history with dealing with those dissidents and Judaism.
Yeah.
And they have a real problem with terrorist attacks on synagogues. It's still there. But this has sort of been part of the discussion, is that, like, it has become very permissible to say really crazy things about Muslims in general that are really only true of extremists. Just like you can't just go on. I mean, I say crazy things about Christians all the time, but I know in my heart of hearts that I'm talking about evangelical Christians. I'm not talking about just like your average, like kindly old lady who goes to church.
Right.
Like that is sort of like the problem that we're facing right now, that Muslims are facing right now.
Yeah.
In any case, that Fox News situation, basically, they traced in the Times where the fact came from, and it was like a loony, crazy circle of like misinformation and misquotes that led them back to a crazy fact that they made up, and then everyone repeated it as if it was fact.
Yeah.
So now moving on to what's important, which is entertainment.
The Oscars.
The Oscars.
Yes.
The Oscars nominee. The Oscar nominees were announced this week, and there was some controversy.
Some controversy.
Depending on who you know, it was different controversy for different people.
Yes, exactly.
Our Facebook walls were a very interesting place.
Yes.
Because all of my lefties were posting about Selma being snubbed.
Right.
And all of my nonsense thinkers were posting about the Lego movie the being Lego snubbed. Movie.
So many people are furious about the Lego movie. And I can I can kind of feel their pain, but it's just sort of
I enjoyed the Lego movie as much as the next person.
We saw it together.
Sure. Yeah. That's great. It was fun.
Yeah.
I don't share a sense of like horror at it.
No.
Snubbing. I'm just sort of like, well, that's too bad.
No. But it's interesting, though, because Selma, people are thinking that Selma got snubbed.
Yeah.
You know, I think mostly they're mad about the fact that Ava DuVernay.
Yeah. No, it's hard.
I can never say her name.
No.
It's weird. It's, some of those letters seem like they're in the wrong place.
Well, there's two V's in her name, and that's a hard. No one sees V's.
Yeah. Anyway, she did not get nominated. She would have been the first female African-American director to be nominated. She was the director of the movie. Because it did get nominated for Best Picture.
Well, and the thing is that it had like a real blowout at the Golden Globes. So I think people were sort of thinking like, oh, people love this movie. So it will definitely, because it got a lot of nominations in the Golden Globes.
It did, yes.
And so I think everyone assumed that it was sort of a shoe-in for all these other things. You know, the guy who plays Martin Luther King.
He didn't get nominated.
He didn't get nominated.
He was nominated for
a Golden Globe. And didn't he win the Golden Globe?
No,
he didn't win the Golden Globe. But he was nominated for a Golden Globe. There were just, like, a lot of pieces that where they sort of, like, just didn't include them in categories that people thought they were shoo-ins for.
Right. Well, and it won Best Picture at the Globes, and I think it may very well win Best Picture at the Oscars, too. I think that it just sort of, like, called into question. A lot of people really had some heated debates about it because, obviously, people were upset about it and thought that it was sort of, you know, they were pointing to that statistic that, you know, was in the Los Angeles Times a couple years ago about, like, right, about how, you know, 94% of the Academy's members are white and 77% of them are male. And
they're all old.
The median age is 62. So, but then, of course, there were also the people who were like, well, I mean, 12 Years a Slave killed last year. You know, also, I don't think that Selma has been reviewed quite as well as 12 Years a Slave has been. I'm not sure. I don't intend to see it. I didn't see 12 Years a Slave. It's not because I'm a movie racist. It's because I have decided that I'm like just sort of like a period historical piece racist. I'm gay. I didn't see Milk.
Yeah.
Okay. No. I'm just don't call me a movie racist.
No.
I just don't like movies like this. This is not how I want to spend my time.
Movie person.
I'm sure it's lovely.
It's listen. I haven't seen any of the great films of the last few years that everyone has been blowing out about, like, you know, Gravity and like. I don't like movies with tension.
Right,
so I don't
exactly.
see movies with tension.
Taste. It's taste, people.
It's taste, yeah. But in any case, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that statistic again. It does, I mean, at least this discussion starts again where we're like, because there is sort of an element of like, you know, insider clubbiness with the Oscars every year.
Yeah.
Where like people that are sort of favorites among old white men constantly get nominated, whereas other people aren't taken quite as seriously.
Right.
And that's true with women, like female directors often aren't taken as seriously as male directors. So like,
true.
I think that's part of it where it's just like, it's sort of like a subconscious thing that like a lot of, it's like how in the workplace, sometimes as a woman, and I'm experiencing this a lot, which is why I've been talking about it nonstop, but you'll just sort of be treated like you're slightly less competent than a male who's less qualified than you.
Yeah.
And that is just like a subconscious thing that people do that they don't realize is happening because they have been trained to see women as less competent.
Yeah.
And so I think to a certain degree, that's why this discussion has been happening again.
Yeah.
Is because I think on the director end, they really did expect a nomination for
her.
And I think she has been talked about everywhere. Like she is like a breakout star of this movie herself.
Yeah.
And so for her not to get a nomination feels a little weird just because she's been such a big part of the discussion of this movie.
Exactly. I agree. Well, but I don't know. I mean, films have won Best Picture where the director was, you know, Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for Fargo.
I think
Fargo. what is that? It's another, what the hell is that movie that
he directed? Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. It sounds like Fargo.
Sounds like Fargo, but it's not Fargo.
It's not Largo either. It's
I love Fargo. It's one of my favorite movies.
What the quality what film. I know what movie you're talking about. And we're never going to find out the name of it.
No, we can't know.
We can't know.
It'll come to me in a second.
Yeah, no, it's the one where he goes and gets the hostages.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's, Iran.
Yeah, Iran. That's
that one.
That one.
But the other thing about this is that all 20 of the actors are white.
Yeah.
They got nominated in lead and supporting roles for male and female. And that's the first time that that has happened since the 90s.
I think
a lot of people have been talking about not just whether that was racist, but also,
whether that's a problem.
Because if you're banking on only getting one award for the guy who played MLK, that's not necessarily the Academy's fault. That's sort of like a...
Right,
you know,
that's film's fault.
That's film's fault. That's
for only sort of like a, making awards fodder that includes white people.
Right, exactly.
Which is what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an... And I think that that's... You know, there's sort of like the element of which people... Where people... I think with the awards that go to specific people, if they don't fit the profile, they have a harder time nominating them. Whereas with a picture, you can be like, okay, Selma is a good movie.
Right.
As a whole. And it doesn't... You know, like you can divorce that from the individuals who went into it.
Exactly.
Whereas you can be like, well, this guy doesn't look like a leading man in a traditional sense because he's black. And like leading men are white and have sort of like slightly graying hair and they look like George Clooney or Harrison Ford or, you know, whatever it is. And like this woman doesn't seem like a director because she's a female and she's black and directors are old men. They're old white men. Everybody knows that. So that she's not a real director, obviously. Her film is great.
But, right. exactly. Yeah.
I think there is an element of that that is good. It's insidious. It's harder to sort of figure out what to do about that kind of thing because it's not open racism and it's not open sexism. It's just sort of like expectations.
Yeah.
You know? So in any case, but another controversy is brewing regarding famous old white man Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
Who made a movie about another white man,
yes.
Chris Kyle, or based on this guy who was a Navy SEAL's autobiography, which is American Sniper, which is a movie you've probably heard of. You live in the world.
Right. It set the box office record for
it was huge for the
weekend. $90 million, which is insane.
And it was also, it included some less than wonderful messages to Americans of white male stripes.
Right. Well, this guy is a Navy SEAL, and in his autobiography, there are, you know, a lot of... This is a guy who sort of...
Some questionable thoughts.
Right. He wished that he would have killed more Muslims, you know, when he was a sniper in the Iraq War.
He repeatedly refers to Iraqis as savages in his book.
Yeah. I mean,
he's openly racist in his book.
He's openly racist. He's a person who went and shot looters after Katrina. I mean, this is a guy who enjoys killing people and thinks that all Muslims should probably be killed.
Potentially a sociopath. Also, he's dead now, so he's not anymore. But he was killed by another veteran at a gun range.
But anyway, this movie is sort of getting a lot of press because of sort of like, you know, what we're learning about him and sort of like whether we want to be glorifying him in this movie and also what this movie does glorify. Because apparently a lot of people saw this movie and are now really pro killing all the savage Muslims.
Walking out of American Sniper and tweeting about how they want to, quote, kill all the ragheads.
Right.
That's a thing that's being...
That's a thing.
That's a word that people are using in their tweets.
Lila didn't make that up.
I didn't make that up.
No.
And also, it's sort of an unabashedly pro-war film. So Michael Moore has been on the case, sort of sending his own Twitter war against the pro-war messages in the movie.
Yeah.
during which Stacey Dash, clueless actress Stacey Dash was asked to comment. Yeah. On Fox News. But basically, Moore was saying, like, it's like Eastwood got Vietnam and Iraq confused in this story. Because Iraq, as much as Vietnam was a controversial war for many reasons, Iraq was a less controversial war because it was much more obviously wrong.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know? Like, Vietnam was contentious.
Yeah.
Because there were people that really thought we were trying to stop the spread of communism.
Yeah.
Those people were wrong, but those people existed and felt thoughts. The Iraq war was, like, pretty openly a ruse. And, like, we now mostly accept that as a society.
Yeah.
So, like, this was not a war where it's worth glorifying the sort of myth, the, not message or myth, I just don't have the word for this right now. Mission.
Yes.
That's the word. It's an M word that I was looking for. Jesus Christ.
We're having word troubles.
What is going on with us today?
And I can't think straight because
weekend.
I'm still trying to figure out what movie Ben Affleck directed. That's all I can think about.
Well, life goes on.
Yeah.
So we're ending the podcast on a high note. In any case.
But some of these tweets were
very disturbing.
I mean, like, you mentioned the one about wanting to go kill some ragheads. There was also... somebody said that American Sniper makes me appreciate soldiers 100 times more and hate Muslims whatever I that number is, 100 million times more. It's one with a lot of zeros after it.
Curiously tweets, nice to see a movie where the Arabs are portrayed for who they really are, vermin scum intent on destroying us, then hashtags de Blasio. Which was so weird.
Unclear.
That's a guy
that
whose handle is Harsh New Yorker. I would like nothing to do with this person, by the way. I would contend that they're not the right kind of New Yorker. And then
American Sniper makes me want to go shoot some fucking Arabs.
Yeah. Followed by three handguns.
Artwork of handguns. Yeah.
But so, and a writer, C.J. Whirlman, basically summed up his opinion of what people were talking about when he wrote, American Sniper is a big hit for Americans who fantasize about shooting Arabs but are afraid to go where Arabs shoot back.
Yeah.
Which is sort of...
Boom. Served.
There it is. Anyway, we're classy as a country.
Yeah, sure.
Real classy country.
Yeah.
And in final news...
Oh, man. The GOP had a retreat.
And we talked about how there was some tension about whether they wanted to do this retreat together, because they went, Congress and Senate went together.
Right, which is the first time that they've done this in a while, actually.
In a long time. Yeah, it's I think in a decade. And there was some tension early on, because I think the Senate doesn't really want to be associated with the Congress in this circumstance, and I can understand why.
Right.
They have enough crazies of their own without having to deal with those nutbags.
Yeah.
But they went all together to Hershey, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
where
they had a real chocolate blowout.
They had chocolate soap and chocolate lotion and chocolate shampoo in their rooms. They had chocolate syrup over their salads. They had...
Which, ew.
Ew. So gross. And I am a chocolate lover. I'm a sweet things lover.
Right.
I don't care for any food that doesn't have sugar in it.
Chocolate can fix a lot of things.
Salad's not one of them. That is disgusting.
That's disgusting.
They had Hershey's Kisses spread all over their beds and fans that were blowing scents of chocolate.
Right.
And they couldn't go anywhere as much as any child.
They did. But it's so weird.
Ken Buck said, I've never seen so much chocolate in my life.
Oh.
Like a kid in a candy store, literally.
Really, that's right. Yes.
Anyway, they didn't accomplish anything or agree on anything. They were there to talk about the issues and what they were going to do about their platform, and they still don't know.
Right.
Boehner came back and was like, well, it's fine. We talked a little. Nothing really got accomplished.
Ate some chocolate.
But they, at least they had something fun to occupy their time with while they were busy not settling on their platform in any way, because they aren't the same party anymore.
No.
It was like two parties went to try to agree on what their platform was and realized that wasn't as fun as eating chocolate.
Nothing is. Yeah.
So in any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We will be back next week when you'll have news about the State of the Union, which is what we love. And also, we'll probably tweet about this. So I would stay informed about our Twitter situation.
Yeah, we usually try and do some State of the Union
tweeting.
We're
in California, so it's hard for us to live tweet a lot of the time because we're at work. But that's never stopped me from tweeting before.
Work is literally ruining everything.
It's ruining our lives. It's the reason that I ate a whole bag of Cheetos this week.
Yeah.
That's a real thing that happened.
Yeah.
I'm a person who hasn't been to a McDonald's in probably 15 years, but I ate a whole bag of Cheetos this week.
Yeah.
So think about that, America.
Yikes.
Figure out what to do about
work.
That. In any case, we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.